Good evening. We are starting, and see, I gave you a little bit of a grace period. We're starting 2 minutes late, and we're going to start the session before we get going with a cash door prize. Yes. We have an insulated lunch bag, and it's really cute. It has pink and white hearts on it, and it's really neat. It has a handle, and there's a little bit of cash in there, and I believe that Ed said that was from the ACB Capital Chapter. Is that what Ed said? I think it is. No, I didn't get to. go ahead and tell him. And so for our, let's see, where's Ed? He's coming with his roller skates. Let's have Pam draw the winning ticket. An insulated lunch bag. It has white and pink hearts on it and some black and some red. And there's cash inside. $25 ACB Capital Chapter. Mary Beth Randall, are you in the room? Is that a yes or a no? Where is she? No, no. Mary Beth, if you're in the room, stand up. Otherwise, we draw another name. Okay, she's not in the room. We're drawing another name. Here we go. Who might that be? Catherine Skivers, are you in the room? Yay! We all know that name. You know, that's my favorite kind of insulated lunch bag. With money in it, too. And it has all kinds of hearts, so. Okay. Again, I want to welcome you all to this evening's session. And what I would like to do is give the microphone over to our presiding officer. Please give a huge warm welcome for the man who puts together this convention with all the program items and does so much work on the other committees, our Vice President, Mr. Gene Lozano, Jr. Okay. Someone's talking to him here, so what I'm going to do really quick. Ed, are you in the room? Let's draw another quick door prize. And we will draw, why don't we do one of the Harry and David boxes. And, if we can have Pam draw one more. One more. This box has all kinds of yummies in it. Trail mix. And all right. Is Marlene O'Neill here? Are you in the room? Nope. All righty. Now, if you are in the room, stand up so that we can find you. Tom Randall, are you in the room? Tom Randall is standing in the back of the room. You get Harry and David. All right. And here is Gene. Okay.
Welcome. I'm glad you're all here, and I hope that you've been enjoying the conference and convention. And we do wish to get your input throughout the remainder of the weekend as to the changes we need to do in programming ideas. Before we get into our program for this evening, I've been asked if we could allow two individuals to comment on something. And our end of our last session, there was a question, I understand, regarding Social Security benefits that it was felt that an answer was not given. And so I'm going to first, Bernice, who would like to respond to the question?
Pete Romero.
Pete Romero. Pete, is there a way of getting a mic to Pete?
Thank you very much. Hi. Yeah, it was a little awkward because I didn't know that I should respond when the person representing Social Security was here, so I didn't, but I felt I used to work for Social Security, and I do know the answer to that question, and I feel like it wasn't quite answered. Rick had asked about if you're getting disability benefits, is there a point when you become retirement, and as opposed to you're getting retirement versus disability, and what benefits, if any, are lost? And once a person has disability benefits, either for reasons of blindness or other disability, they're under certain work restrictions as they were described earlier today. But once a person attains what's called full retirement age, and I'll explain that in a minute, then they can earn any amount of money they want, no restriction. In fact, depending upon how much they earn, it could even increase their benefits. They are considered to be fully retired. The benefit converts from a disability to retirement. Doesn't require an application or anything. It just happens beginning with the month that they attain full retirement age. Now, what is that? Well, used to be you could receive benefits at full benefits at 65. That no longer is the case. Full retirement now can be anywhere between 66 and 67, depending upon your birth date. It increases by increments of 2 months. But to make it easy, if you're born anytime after January 1st of 43 and prior to January 2nd of 55, your full retirement age is 66. So if that's the case, once you attain 66 beginning with that month, you can earn anything you want without losing your benefits. Okay. That's it.
Thank you, Pete. And since there is such an interest, this may be something we might want to dialogue with you and Bernice and some of the others to do maybe a panel presentation on the subject, since many of us are close to retirement age and are interested about Social Security, how it might be impacted. Thank you very much. Okay, now, another item is Jeff Tom is here at the table, and he would like to tell us something about the I'll let Jeff talk about it. So, hey, here's the mic. You got a mic?
I got one, thank you.
Oh, okay.
So about 15 years ago or so, I can't remember when, maybe Bernice Wood or Roger, but sometime they an American Council of the Blind quilt was manufactured, and it has squares, very tactile, very visual, squares from all sorts of affiliates all over the country, and they used to have various auctions or sweepstakes or whatever to give it away and to travel around states. We never got it in California, but Leslie, my wife, decided a few years ago in the auction where they decided to auction it for good that she wanted to have that quilt. And so we now have it, and we keep forgetting to bring it so that all of you can see it. And finally, we got it a few miles from our house over here. And so I'm going to have Ed describe it, and hopefully we'll have another volunteer. I don't know if we do or not because I don't want Ed to do it. But if we have another volunteer that can pass it around so people can take a look at it and touch it and look at it, that would be great. But if not, we'll have to do it some other way. But we can have Ed sort of describe a little bit to you maybe while he's up here. So, Ed, I'm going to hand it off to you. He just left here. So I don't know if we have anybody if we have anyone else in the room. Oh, good, Mary Lou is here. And she is willing to help me out. So I'll give you the mic, and thank you, and I hope everybody gets to look at it. Well, you can talk.
What am I going to say?
Just sort of give a general description of it and begin to pass it around.
So each one represents a different state, and it was in 2001 in Des Moines that the quilt was started.
Thank you. It's beautiful. It's I didn't realize every chapter had made one of these squares. This is not an easy thing to put together. California Council of the Blind is down here at the bottom, if any of you could see this.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the map of the United States. It's a big square or rectangle with all the small pieces that people have donated or put together. But it is not the map of the United States. And each square has a different insignia.
Okay, wait, excuse me. Okay, let's get a mic over to the front row, and one person at a time. We'll get in a description, so please.
No, it wasn't me.
Oh, now it's on.
Jean? Oh, this is Kathy Skivers. As I recall, every state submitted a square. We were asked to design a square and get a square, and if you couldn't design it for your state, somebody did it for you. But each state that was in the American Council when this started put a square in this quilt.
Right in the middle, there's the ACB song. I don't know what tune it is, but it says, "We're a group that has a vision with pride and dignity, looking toward a brighter future where there's true quality, optimistic, and determined to direct our destiny. Come and join us, change the world with ACB." Verse, we come in different packages and personalities with many skills and talents, but few opportunities. Just take an honest look at jobs that blind folks really do. Teachers, lawyers, writers, business owners, just to name a few. We believe that there is more to life than working five. You've got to laugh and have some fun to really feel alive. When it comes to love and friendship, we can give so very much. We may be out of sight, but we're by no means out of touch. We're not through yet. We've got to open up the box to be sure of what's inside. So don't label. Oops. Don't label us as helpless before giving us a try. We're not asking for a handout. We don't want your sympathy. All we want is just a chance to prove our capabilities. Come and join us. Change the world with ACB. Words and Music by Brenda and Dave Trevino, Nashville, Tennessee. And down here at the bottom, it says, originated, coordinated by Brenda Trevino, MTCB President, 1998. California Council of the Blind has the state of California, and on the right-hand corner is a bear. And in the middle of California is it's all in green, and in the middle it's kind of white, and there's a blue eye right in the middle of that.
Thank you, Mary Lou. And what we'd like to do is seeing if we can have it passed around to the audience and eventually getting back to Jeff. And if we can do this quietly, we'll go on with the program, but we do want everyone to have an opportunity to feel it and get a sense of what it is like, this quilt. Thank you. Are there any other announcements that or somebody would like to bring up? Peter?
We have a room change for tomorrow's meetings and luncheons. The guide dog uses California. They were supposed to meet in the concierge room. They'll be meeting in the Brandywine room. And the RSVC luncheon, I'm not sure if there's a meeting associated with that. They'll be meeting in the concierge room on the 12th floor. So those two rooms have been swapped. This is due to the size of the luncheon for the guide dog users group. Yeah, basically the guide dog users will be meeting in the Brandywine room for their meeting and luncheon. The Randolph Shepherd vendors of RSVC will be meeting in the concierge room, which is located on the 12th floor.
Anything about meals? Just be a second. Go ahead, Peter.
We still have meals available for the luncheons tomorrow. They include Guide Dog Users of California, RSVC, and OCB, and our banquet meals also available. Breakfast cannot, it's too late. So if you want to purchase a meal, do it before 11 a.m. for the luncheons and before 3 p.m. For the banquet. Thank you.
And if you're debating whether you do or do not want to go, please make your decision as soon as possible. We're struggling again, like the last few conventions, to meet our food and beverage minimum. And if we don't meet it, then we're going to have to take out of our reserves to cover the difference. So it really helps, as well as what you will learn while you're at the luncheon, which many of them have speakers that will be very informative. Tuan, you would like to speak. And if we could have everyone's attention, please.
Good evening, GGB. I'm Tuan, GGB student president. I'm reminding you the GGBS will have a program tomorrow from 10:15. We're going to be talking about iOS and Android, and we had some really great free speakers, and we would love you to come. In addition, the business session will be at 9, and you are all welcome to come. Thank you.
Yes.
Hello. Oh, there we go. Oh my gosh. BRLLC is selling fudge tomorrow, $2 a bag. We have a fudge with nuts and fudge without. If you want to buy three bags, it's a bargain, $5. Not with me right now, but it's in the exhibit area tomorrow. I think we're going to be open from 11 to 3 tomorrow. Okay, so storm by, buy everything we have, and we'll be happy.
Okay, we're going to thank you because we're really behind, but Renee's starting because we have some presenters, and I know already they're going to be late starting. But first, it's really important for you to know that we have had one a major sponsor for this convention, a silver sponsor from Vanda Pharmaceutical Company. They have been very, very helpful in helping us out over the past years. And they've been also sharing with us some exciting research on the 24 hours sleep awake disorder. So please, let's give Vanda Pharmaceutical Company a big hand. We need other sponsors like them. Okay. Now, let's start. And the first thing, as we do traditionally, is during the second general session is remember those CCB members that have passed away since the last convention. So I would like to see if there are if people would, if there's anyone who would like to share of the passing of somebody from their chapter or the state organization, say a few words.
This is Charlene Ornelas from the San Diego Braille Club. And we have two members who have deceased this year, Michael Eden and Marcus Jordan. Marcus died in December, and I think Michael died in November.
Thank you, Charlene. Kathy Skivers? Can you get a mic to Kathy?
Seem to want to talk to me. We're trying to turn me on. Not often, I don't, never mind, we won't go there. I don't know if anyone from San Diego is here or not who wants to mention this man. I want to mention some people, and I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but I thought very highly of a gentleman from San Diego we lost. Many of you may not know, but some of you do remember, Manuel Gonzalez. He passed away. And in Antelope Valley, Ken Creef, who for a time was president until he found out that people with that much vision couldn't be, passed away in February on the 23rd, and just a month before, after his wife Diane also passed away. We're advised that Ken had a huge military funeral. He was one of the three veterans who helped us down there. And I'm going to pass Mita County for a minute because somebody wanted to mention her. But Russell Kletzing was a president here at one time in 1959, 1960, and he passed away on President's Day, which I thought was kind of interesting. And in Bayview, we lost John Marin on February 20th. And on February 21st, we lost Dorothy Valerga, who we love very much and who is a mainstay of the organization, that chapter, for a very long time. And, of course, I don't think anyone I know, they're not here from Chico. I don't believe they are. Al Bigler we lost, and we all loved him very much. And we're so sorry he's gone. And those are all friends. And to those of you who are new, I know the names don't mean much, but to a lot of us, those people mean so much, and there's no way to count the hours that they put into this organization. And we love them.
Hello, this is Roger Peterson. The person I want to mention is not, well, there are a couple of people who aren't really members, but I want to mention them. Number one is, he wouldn't be quite between the last convention and now. Last July, our chapter member, Art Takahara, lost his wife, Sharon. She was a lovely lady. I visited her just before she died, like a week. What? No, July. What I really wanted to say was a person who was not, as far as I know, a member of ACB or any affiliate, but who did a lot in our favor in a number of positions that she held. A lady named Cynthia Waddell, who used to be the ADA coordinator for the city of San Jose and was the president, for a brief time, president of the Independent Living Center, for which I serve on the board, and was on the county commission with me. She was hearing impaired, and she made one of her major causes web access for people with disabilities. She had a hearing impairment. She was actually at the White House for some kind of a ceremony, and she fell ill there and turned out to have brain cancer. And she just she was sick for quite a long while, finally died just on April 3rd. And I'd like to remember her. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Wait, there was Katrina first.
Ruth Arellano, wife of Manuel Arellano, who has been treasurer of Alameda chapter for many years, and then Ruth Arellano came to all the meetings, and she was used to be very active at the East Bay Center for the Blind. She cleaned a lot, and if she thought something should be thrown away, she'd throw it away. So you had to be careful not to leave too much. You better careful not, you know, not to let. Be careful not to leave her anything for her to throw away, I guess. Anyway, she was very good, but she wore out, and she passed away on the 5th of February.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We also at Greater Los Angeles lost Joanne Wolf on December 15th. I know a lot of you will certainly remember her for many, many years involved in ACB, CCB, and everything. So our love is certainly with her as well. And we were certainly sorry to lose her, and yet she went through a lot of illness. So she's in a much better place.
Is it? Yeah. This is Nancy Angwin from the Fresno chapter. Just yes. Wanted to mention I lost my husband, and he was a music teacher in Fresno and was instrumental in doing the proposal for Valley Center for the Blind to get a children's choir started, and I was going to be his accompanist. And I'm still going to try and get that together, but I think I'm branching out, not just kids. I want all blind musicians and singers and all that. So I just kind of, yeah, it's been tough.
What was your husband's name?
Don Angwin.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, then we'll have a few moments right now to thoughts and prayers for these members that have passed away. Okay, thank you. I'm going to take the liberty as being the president of this meeting to I want to change the order of the program because right now we have some presenters that, and I think is having them give their presentation, then we can then continue with our business of the evening. So if our presenters from the Sierra Donor Services could come up front, and we'll start. Oh, you are? Good. Thank you. You anticipated. Okay. As you've gone through the program, we have, you know, the presentation title is Gift of Life. And we have with us this evening three presenters, and if excuse me a second, I have just lost my place. And No, I'm just finding my space in my braille. Thank you. Deanna Santana, who is the Public Education Coordinator for the Sierra Donor Services. We have the second presenter is Sandy Nelson, who is a Donor Life Ambassador and a kidney and pancreas recipient, and the treasurer of the Solano County Council of the Blind. And then there's been a change in presenters. We have with us Kathy Howard, who is the Ocular Account Manager of the Sierra Donor Services. I think this you're going to find to be a very interesting, informative presentation about who can be a donor, who can be a recipient, and some information about the cornea transplants. But you're going to hear, too, about organ and tissue transplants. So let's give our panelists a big hand.
Do you have a mic there, Gina? Uh-huh. Do you have a mic there?
I do.
Okay.
All righty. I want to first thank Sandy Nelson for introducing us to Mr. Lozano and for the opportunity to speak at the California Council for the Blind. We're honored to be here tonight to share information about how everyone has the potential to be a hero through organ and tissue donation and how transplantation may touch you, as well as information about corneal transplantation and the research being done in that arena. I'm very grateful to be joined by Sandy Nelson, a member of the California Council of the Blind, like Gene said, and also Kathy Howard, who's the ocular account manager with Sierra Donor Services, who's much better looking than Sam Ramos was. So we're all grateful that she's here. Let me start by telling you what Sierra Donor Services is. It's a nonprofit organ, eye, and tissue transplant donor network serving nearly 4 million people in Northern California and Northern Nevada. We're committed to saving and improving lives by connecting one another to organ. Connecting one life to another through donation and transplantation. We support potential donor families in their time of loss, provide care for them through the donation process, and coordinate the recovery of organs and tissues for transplant. We also provide aftercare support to donor families while at the same time working to inspire universal acceptance of donation to ensure every person in need receives the gift of life. Tomorrow at the registration table, there'll be some brochures about what we're talking about tonight, and I also brought some keychains, and everyone thought that the registration table might be a good place to put those. So tomorrow, stop by if you're interested in those. I want to tell you a little bit about how I became involved with Sierra Donor Services. And in order to do that, I have to tell you about my son, Scott. My son, Scott, was a tall, dark, handsome guy. You know, he was a card. He was a courtesy clerk at Raley's, and he was what they called the worst bagger but the best courtesy clerk, because he would pack everybody's groceries, 30-pound bags, carry them out to their car, have them smiling and laughing, and then it'd take the little old ladies four or five trips to carry their groceries in. But nobody ever complained. They would go to the manager and they'd say, he's the best courtesy clerk we have, because he doesn't ask us about the weather. He asks us, what did you do with your grandkids last weekend? Did you guys go to church this Sunday? And he made a commitment to get to know all the customers. So when they would change his what check stand he was bagging at, the entire line would move. So that's the kind of kid that my son was. He was a good student. He was in 2011, he was a junior at Union Mine High School up in Placerville. He was a good student. He was incredibly bright, but he wasn't a great student. He told us a story once that he didn't have to do his physics homework. And I said, really, Scott, who doesn't have to do physics homework? And he said, honest, Mom, the teacher told me I don't have to. And so anyways, I never believed him, but he was getting a B in physics, so I couldn't really argue with him. But I found out later that actually was the case, that Scott was able to do the problems in his head and would just write down the answers. And his teacher came around and would look at his workbook and say, Scott, you got to show your work. You can't just copy the answer from somebody. And he said, Mr. Purdom, I did do the work. It's all in my head. And he said, show me how to do the work. And so Scott rifled down the problem, and he was right. And so they made a deal that he didn't have to do his homework as long as any time Mr. Purdom asked him to show him how he did it, he could. And so Scott ended up with a B in physics without ever cracking a book. You know, he was an all-around great guy. He was an athlete, but he wasn't one of those athletes that didn't like everybody. He wrote a journal that said, I don't belong to any particular clan, because if I get kicked out of one, I want to be moved to another. We learned after Scott's death that when he was a junior, and like I said, he was a starter on the football team for his sophomore and junior year for the varsity team, that there was a freshman girl that was walking around and her backpack was unzipping as she was going to class and books were about to fall out, and Scott ran up behind her and zipped up her backpack and said, you don't want your books to fall all over here, because then everybody will make fun of you. Have a great day. And off he went. Well, I never knew that, but I learned about that after his death. And that just kind of is an example to me of the caring, giving heart that Scott had. So on May 17th, 2011, which we're just coming up on 2 years, unfortunately, Scott had a car accident on his way home from school. He wasn't speeding. He was doing 30 miles an hour in a 35-mile-an-hour zone. And unfortunately, he lost control of his car, and there was an SUV coming the other direction. And Scott suffered a traumatic brain injury and also a neck injury. And Scott was dead on scene, but by the grace of God, the paramedics revived him. Because he was a young, healthy athlete, his heart began to begin. They went to the hospital. They began medical procedures. And for 4 days, the hospital staff, the emergency staff, the nursing staff fought to save Scott's life. They did everything humanly possible to save his life. And people around the world were praying for Scott as prayer chains go off. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with those. And we prayed for a miracle, and we got a miracle on May 21st, 2011. It just wasn't the miracle that we expected. And our family likes to say, on the worst day of our lives, five families got the best news of their lives, because Scott became an organ donor and a tissue donor and a cornea donor. Scott's heart... Thank you, but it's all Scott. Scott's heart beats on in a 67-year-old grandpa who's now able to go camping and fishing. His lungs were transplanted into a 26-year-old young lady who had cystic fibrosis and only had dreamed about being able to fulfill her dreams of having a career after college. His kidney and pancreas, one kidney and pancreas went to a mom of three who has diabetes. His other kidney went to a dad of who has twins, and his liver went to a 46-year-old dad of three boys. His sight gave, he gave sight to two people, a 14-year-old young man and a 26-year-old young lady. And I love the fact to think that Scott's giving vision to other people, because Scott loved the world. He didn't want to be in the United States, not for 1 minute. He played. He went to Australia when he was 12 and found rugby, and from that point on, he only wanted to be on the other side of the pond. So I hope that Scott's eyes are somewhere looking at something other than the United States, because he didn't like it here. A lot of people wonder why I want to go out day after day and talk about Scott and talk about death and talk about grief. And the reason why I do this is I became, as part of my grief program, involved as a Donate Life ambassador, because I wanted to look at the best thing that came out of the worst thing in my life and how could I make that a positive situation. Well, when I became an ambassador, I learned that there are over 117,000 people in the United States waiting for a life-saving transplant. There's over 22,000 people in California alone waiting for a transplant, and 18 people die every day waiting for that transplant. And I thought that was a tragedy, because the main reason that people don't donate their organs and tissues is because they either don't understand the process or they have a misconception that they've learned about it. A lot of people rule themselves out because they think they're too old or they have a medical liability, that disability that might prevent them from being a donor. But I can tell you that there's very few things that rule you out from being a donor. We make the recommendation for you to join the registry, which you can do at donatelifecalifornia.org, or you can do it at the DMV when you get your driver's license or ID card. Make your wishes known. The process takes place so that nothing would be recovered if it's not likely to be transplanted. So please, you know, if giving the gift of life is something that you think that you want to do, then make sure that that pink dot is on your driver's license. Another thing that we battle in the community is that people think it's against their religion. But there's only two religions, and neither one is largely represented in California, that prohibit donation. And a lot of people are afraid that they won't be saved. And that's the reason why I tell Scott's story, is because I can tell you that they will not even look in your wallet to find out if you have a pink dot on your driver's license. It only happens in a very small number of cases that you're able to be a full donor. But make sure that your wishes are known, not just to the when you register, but also to your family. But I can also tell you that your family won't remember a conversation that you had. So please make sure you do both talk to your family and put that dot on your driver's license. I'm going to turn it over to Sandy Nelson, who's going to tell you a little different part about the organ donation and transplantation story.
Hi, guys. You'll have to bear with me. I'm really nervous. You guys know my name. It's Sandy Nelson, and welcome. I'm a kidney pancreas transplant recipient. After almost 40 years of being a type 1 juvenile onset diabetic, my life was forever changed. On November 18, 2005, by two organs, two gifts from someone I didn't even know. I was in the seventh grade, not quite 11 years old, when I had the usual checkup at the doctor. I had all the normal childhood diseases back then of measles, chickenpox, mumps, colds, flu, and most recently, the flu. You know, that flu that got us all back in the late 60s, the influenza outbreak, if any of you can remember. Everybody got it. I just never seemed to get over it. The fatigue, the stomach aches continued off and on for quite some time. And by October, I was beginning to have these constant feelings and stomach feelings and constant cravings. I was hungry, but I didn't feel good. I was eating my mom at a house and home. We went back to the doctor, and he gave us not a urine test, but he took some more blood work and told us that, yes, it was a virus, that I'd had a virus in the past. This continued until February in 1968, after my parents became really concerned, because now not only had I been feeling poorly, I had also dropped weight. Again, I went to the physician, and they put me on the scale. I was 5'2" and 68 pounds. I had lost 38 pounds since my first measurement in September. Remarkably, I was still keeping on going, but I knew that I was really sick. My doctor came back into the room. His face was very pale, and he told my parents that Sandy has diabetes. At that moment, all I heard were the words, die. We were transferred to another doctor who had specialized in diabetes, especially with children. He perked me up on the exam table, told me, "Don't worry, Sandy, we're going to take care of you." I went home to pack my little suitcase, not knowing if I would be coming back, and I went to Good Samaritan Hospital. There I spent 10 days learning how to give myself injections, learning what to eat, what not to eat, learning I had to eat at certain times because of my insulin injections and peaks that I would have to have food in my system. I learned that exercise would keep me in control and also live a more normal life. And I could live a happy and normal life with control. I must say, my life was all changed with that diagnosis, but I swore to myself that I would do everything I could to keep from ever feeling like that again. I just followed my way. I followed my diet. I exercised. I was very active in school. I competed in junior high, high school, and college. And my last competition, I won second place in the Northern California gymnastic. I went on to college. I got my Bachelor of Science degree in nursing, and I met my husband there in the aeronautical engineering program. We were married in 1985. I loved my work, and I specialized in pediatric oncology and hematology. I loved my job, but I couldn't say no very easily. Nurses are always asked to work double shifts, as well as nurses' aides. They're always short on staff. Saying no was hard for me. So that led to lots of overtime. But, you know, I always thought I could catch up on sleep, like we all do. As I grew older, I noticed that things like stress, lack of sleep, and almost everything affected my blood sugar. I continued to work, and I soon found that reactions were happening quite frequently for myself. No matter what I did, I couldn't get under control, and that was not normal for me. I would go to the doctor, and we'd set up some other routine to do. I continued working until I had several very low unconscious reactions. It devastated me. This was not supposed to happen. This was not what I envisioned. When I could no longer work, I stayed at home and tried to figure out what in the heck I could do to be productive with what I could do. I became what I read in medical books of all the complications that could arise from diabetes. And that was not in my dreams. Soon, I was diagnosed with cataracts, had those removed, and then had glaucoma in my left eye, where I had a drain up, surgically placed, and that decreased my pressure. And then the retinopathy was discovered, and I had multiple laser treatments, and I was declared legally blind. I then decided that, you know what, I can still do a lot of things. Maybe I'll become a floral designer, because I see enough to get in trouble, but I sure could put some flowers together. As time went on, I began noticing other symptoms, and I was diagnosed with end-stage renal disease. I soon started dialysis in December of 2004, and I was put on the transplant list for a kidney and pancreas transplant. I was hopeful, but there are a lot of people on the transplant list, and I wasn't sure at that point that I could make it in time. Things were rough. I pretended they weren't, but deep inside I knew they were. We were getting ready to move to Washington State, where my husband had a job transfer. I set up my dialysis appointments in Washington, and I was ready to go in 2 weeks. It was during the Thanksgiving weekend of 2005. My brother called and asked if I would like to go do the Harry Potter premiere with my nephew. Boy, that was big time, and he really wanted to go. He was so excited. So I could spend the weekend, but then I went. I brought my phone because, you know, I'm on call for that call. And we got into the theater, and wouldn't you know it, light went out, phone rang. I was so excited, I almost screamed and shushed by everybody in the theater. We walked out, and I was on my way to California Pacific Medical Center. I had to be there by midnight, just like Cinderella. And I arrived. My family was there. My good friends were there. And my best friend from nursing school had a bottle of Dom Perignon. And she said, "This is waiting for you when you come out." I entered the operating room, and I noticed that there were two doctors sitting in the corner working quickly on something. I didn't know what it was. I wasn't put out at that time, but they were making sure and cutting all the necessary tissue for my organs so that they could be placed nice and cleanly. When I woke up, I have to tell you guys, I didn't have any pain. Not a single, I don't remember any pain. Of course, we're on the pump when you come out of surgery, but I didn't ask for any pain medicine. They kept asking me, are you all right? And I said, oh my gosh, I've never felt so good in all my life. My cheeks were flushed and red and rosy. My color returned. I didn't have a complication with recovery. I got to go home in almost a record 7 days. I miss Thanksgiving. That pumpkin pie at the hospital just doesn't taste right. But from that moment on, I can eat whatever I want at any time I want. And I am just free of the worry of going to bed and not waking up. I have to tell you guys also that during the time of all this upheaval for myself, we decided to get a dog, another dog. And she turned out to be, of all things, my care dog. She's a Rottie. We love Rots. And when I was having a low reaction, she, at 8 weeks old, started crying. And she started pawing at my foot. Now, I was unable to recognize when low reactions occurred later on in my life with diabetes. So they would pop up and I could fall right over anywhere. She would alert me. I could figure out, hey, something's wrong, and go get myself to prevent an unconscious low. So she saved my life so many times. But today, because of my transplant, because of that special gift, she's off duty and she's the princess she deserves to be. What I can tell you now is that, like Deanna had mentioned, all of us can give the gift of life. And that gift is a special gift. My donor's name, I soon found out 5 years later, his name was Darren. He was 16 years old, a very active kid in high school. And he and his best friend were on an ATV going around in the field. They lived on a farm. They had an accident. Darren had suffered a massive head injury, and his family decided that they were going to donate Darren's organs. It was difficult for them, but they decided he would want that. So now I have his kidney and his pancreas, and I can live a normal life. And I wake up every morning thanking Darren, most of all, his family, and all of us can do that. So please know that you can help save or help change someone's life for the better. Thank you.
So now I'm going to talk a little bit about cornea blindness and cornea transplantation. iBank was started in the 70s by Northern California Lions Sight Association and the UC Davis Medical Center. We are now part of a larger organization that's a nonprofit donor network that we coordinate the recovery of eye tissue, organs, and also musculoskeletal tissue and skin for transplantation. At Sierra Donor Services iBank, we provide corneas for transplant, but we also provide eye tissue for practice and research. Our commitment is to our local community so that we're able to consistently provide high quality ocular tissue, ensuring that every person in need of a cornea transplant receives the gift of sight. So when we get consent for eye tissue, we recover the tissue from 2-year-olds to 75-year-olds. We put that tissue in preservation medium and inside a cornea vial. And Deanna's going to pass that around so that you can become familiar with how the tissue is offered out for transplantation to the surgeon. It's put in that vial in preservation medium and stored at 2 degrees to 6 degrees centigrade until the tissue's offered out for transplantation. We evaluate the donor's medical and social history to ensure that the tissue is safe for transplant. And there are many conditions that the patient may have and still not rule them out as a donor. For example, many of you may say, I'm blind. Why would you want my eye tissue? Well, we do. People that have retinal blindness or posterior chamber blindness, their cornea still may be very healthy and viable for transplantation. So we ask that you not rule yourself out, but please, if you want to be a donor, sign up on the registry. You can go to www.donatelifecalifornia.org and sign up to be an organ donor. Also, there are many conditions at the time of patient's death. People die from all kinds of reasons that are either trauma or sicknesses, but you can be quite ill and still become a cornea donor and an organ donor and a tissue donor. Cornea donors can come from people that are the sickest. For example, if you had organ cancer, cancer of the bowel, cancer of the colon, cancer of the breast, thyroid cancer, that rules you out for any kind of tissue donation or organ donation, but it doesn't rule you out as a potential eye donor. So we don't want people to say, rule themselves out. We ask that you sign up as a donor and let the experts decide at your time of death whether or not you are eligible to become a donor. The criteria is very complicated, and if you have any questions about whether you think you could or couldn't be a donor, please, I'll be available for questions after the talk. So when we go on site, we generally recover just the cornea. If we have consent, then we recover the rest of the eye, which is called the posterior pole. From the posterior pole, we take the sclera, which is the white part of the eye, and that's used for other kinds of transplants. For example, you had just talked about your glaucoma shunt. Sclera is used to also cover the glaucoma shunt so that it doesn't puncture the eye tissue. So the most important thing when we do go out and do a cornea recovery is to get that corneal tissue in preservation medium as quickly as possible. So we like to, our criteria is to have that cornea tissue in the preservation fluid within 15 hours after the time of death. So you can imagine that's a lot of work to get the call or the referral of the deceased person, do the review of the case, determine if the patient may be eligible, then go on the donor registry to see if the patient is located on the registry as a first-person consent, or for us to call the family and approach them about donation, get the consent, do the medical social screening, come back to the laboratory, get all of our equipment, get out to the hospital, do the donor prep and recover that tissue and get that tissue in preservation medium within 15 hours. That's a lot of work. So it makes it easier for us if you go and sign up to be a donor so that your family already knows and that you're already on there as a first person consent. So that's what we would really encourage you to do. So after we do the recovery, we bring the cornea back to the lab and then start work to both evaluate the patient's medical chart, the social history taken from the next of kin, and we also send out a specimen of the donor's blood for laboratory testing to rule out infectious diseases. After all the tests and evaluations are done, we send everything through again to our quality department to process a quality assurance review. And then finally, the tissue and the history go to our medical director to do a final sign-off for transplantation. At that point, the tissue is then offered out for transplantation. So I think everyone knows what the cornea is. Basically, the cornea is the clear dome-shaped covering over your eye. It's really about the size of a dime, the thickness and the size of a dime, or also a contact lens if you're familiar with contact lenses. And the cornea is made of highly organized cells and proteins, but contains no blood vessels. It's really avascular. So there are five layers of the cornea, each having a vital, important function. See well, all of those layers of the cornea must be free of any cloudy or opaque area because the cornea must remain transparent to reflect the light properly. So the innermost layer of the cornea is called the endothelium. Each of us is born with a certain number of cells in our endothelium, and as we age, those cells decrease. That's why we have the upper age limit of 75, because after age 75, generally those cells are very depleted. Now, I can tell you, occasionally there are 75-year-olds that have excellent-looking corneas, but for the general reason, we just cut off at 75. So when the clear covering or the cornea becomes clouded or opaque from many different things, it can be from trauma or infection or disease, eventually it can cause so much scarring that the patient may become corneal blind. So some of the examples that cause this scarring are trauma. The trauma could be punctures or lacerations, foreign bodies, or burns. And the infections could come from viral, bacterial, or fungal. And some examples are herpes. Herpes of the eye is very, very common and is the most common reason for corneal blindness. There are other diseases that affect the eye and the cornea also. One of them is Fuchs dystrophy. That's a major cause of corneal blindness. And it's a condition that affects the innermost layer that destroys the cells that cause a chain reaction to the rest of the cornea, making it swell and become opaque or clouded. The cell loss is then irreversible because I told you there's only so many cells that you have in that layer. And so once those become damaged, you have no way of ever recovering from that. The only possible way is a cornea transplant. So there are different techniques of cornea transplants. For the last 70 years, there's just been mainly one technique, and it's been performed to 90% success rate. It's considered the most successful transplant of all transplants, and it's called a full-thickness cornea graft or a penetrating keratoplasty. And in a PK, the surgeon cuts out the damaged cornea. They use a little trephine blade that looks like a cookie cutter in a round shape. They remove the entire cornea and then replace it with an allograft or donor cornea. It's sutured in place with a serial around the edge of the cornea. Sutures are placed, and they're left there for a year to a year and a half. And the reason that it takes that long is it takes that long for that cornea to become part of the person's new eyeball, for the donor tissue to actually take. The only problem with PKs is when the doctors suture that cornea down, it may cause the shape of the eyeball to change, which may change the visual acuity because it may cause astigmatism. So you may go in blinded, but have your sight restored only to have glasses because you have astigmatism. So in the last 6 years, there's around 2006, a new technology of transplant was developed that focused on transplanting only the affected layers of the cornea. These procedures are called endothelial keratoplasties. I told you about that lower bottom tissue, the endothelial layer. Well, there are various forms of endothelial keratoplasty. They differ with thickness of the grafts transplanted, but ultimately they accomplish the same objective, which is replacing the damaged area of the cornea with healthy donor tissue. Unlike the penetrating keratoplasty, the EK procedures only require two small incisions, the largest being only less than 1/8 of an inch. So you could see if you replace that tissue and only have to have a small amount of suturing, it's not going to change the contour of your eye. So therefore, you won't have the astigmatism issue. So patients that are just having those endothelial transplants do not have the acuity problems that PK patients have. The cornea usually clears in 6 to 8 months, which is half the time in a penetrating keratoplasty. And so going back to the Fuchs dystrophy, that's the kind of patient that would really benefit from this endothelial keratoplasty. So those procedures are prepared by bringing the donor cornea into our laboratory, and we cut down into that endothelial layer, making it available for transplants. And just to give you a reference about that tissue, the tissue that is transplanted is about the same thickness as a human hair. So this procedure has grown in popularity and is used as much as the penetrating keratoplasty. So about 50% of the patient have PKs and about 50% have EKs. But this is a very, very new kind of transplant, and it's just starting to, take hold. So we believe it's going to really change over the next several years. So the future of transplant is there are a lot of advancements to improve the transplant technology while reducing the risks and side effects to the recipient. And scientists are actively researching ways to use stem cell therapy to replace the cornea without the need of transplants. Stem cell therapy is also being used to research for eye disease that affects the retina. And we have also provided research tissue for our doctors developing cornea cloning. So that's why it's imperative for our bank to continue to receive transplantable tissue as well as tissue for research so that we can help prevent blindness in the future. So does anyone have any questions?
Thank you. Before we have the audience, I have one question to ask you, Ms. Howard. I work at Sac State and the Disabled Student Services Office, and one of my students recently came in who's may be going through some experimental cornea transplant, and the doctor and him have been talking about a transplant from the tissue from a shark's eye. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. I don't. In fact, we work very closely with UC Davis Medical Center. So if this is going on at another facility, you know, I might not know about that. But since we're affiliated with UCD and that's the center for research that I know about in Sacramento, it'd be very interesting to find out about that.
Because apparently, for some reason or other, there's a particular type of shark, which I don't know what it is, that it's cornea tissue. It's supposed to be supposed to be excellent for this, and I was just wondering, and that's something he and his doctor have been looking at.
Yeah,
so.
Well, what's interesting to us is that there actually is a lot of human corneal tissue available. There isn't a shortage. There may be a shortage from one week to another, but in general, there is not a real shortage. In fact, a lot of corneas from the U.S. are going outside because the tissue is viable for 14 days in this medium, but doctors are very picky and they only want to use it the first 5 days. So if we have tissue that's not placed in the first 5 days, then it goes overseas to other countries.
Interesting. Okay, questions. We could take probably 5 questions.
Thanks. My question is, you mentioned an age limit on corneal transplants. What about other organ donor transplants? Is there an age limit?
Do you want to answer it? You want me to? Well, generally speaking, we don't put an age criteria out there. We evaluate the patient at the time of their death because you can get a 16-year-old that has mistreated their body from the time they were very young, and their organs may not be as functioning as well as a 65-year-old or a 70-year-old. So we try to evaluate each organ separately because someone's pancreas might not be working well, but their kidneys may be working there. Their heart might be very, very strong, but their lungs are not as viable. So every patient is different every time. But generally, we take organs. We evaluate up to age 85. Sure.
I was just wondering, you mentioned stem cell research for certain retina diseases. Do you have the specific diseases that they're
targeting?
You
know what? We don't, because we're only involved in the corneal part. And it's frustrating because we knew you would ask those questions because, you know, I'm preaching to a crowd that's really very interested. Unfortunately, we just work with the, you know, anterior portion of the eye.
Is there a cost for the cornea?
Yes, that's an excellent question because it's free to us, but we provide it out for transplantation, and we charge a fee. In the United States, it's against the law to sell tissue, so we're not selling the tissue. We're actually recovering for the recovery fees, the evaluation fees, and the processing fees and the distribution fees. Generally, the cost that we, at our bank right now, we're on the lower end across the United States, the charge that we put through to the surgical facility is $2,800 for a cornea. So for a cut cornea, we add on $650 to that. But we're one of the lowest, believe it or not, in California, in an expensive town, we are the lowest in the United States. We try to keep our fees as low as possible.
With research, and to start with, they weren't that expensive. Now they say the cost is close to $1 million.
Oh my gosh, you probably got your tissue probably very, very on the low end because they were experimenting probably, and that's what happens is that they use patients as experimental because we really need to. But then when it becomes viable, then the costs go up.
I had a question. You had mentioned cloning. Does that mean actually cloning the cornea to grow individual corneas? Is
yes.
that what you're getting to?
For example.
That's kind of what I thought you were getting at, but I wasn't sure.
No. That's exactly right. What the doctors are doing are taking tissue from the patient's good cornea. They're putting it in a petri dish, and believe me, it's more scientific than that. But, yes, they are cloning a whole cornea for transplant. And that's being done at UC Davis.
Question, is there any work being done on progress towards an optic nerve implant or a clone through stem cell
yes.
research?
Yes, okay. That's exactly right. And we have been really trying, we were trying to prepare for this talk because we knew you were going to ask us those questions. Unfortunately, we had a hard time finding out that information also. But yes, there is stem cell therapy for retinal and optic nerves, and they're actually talking about optic nerve transplants now. That's going to be super, super important because those nerve cells are so tiny. If you talk about the endothelial being the size of a hair, I can't even imagine what those optic nerve cells are like, and that's what has been the bugaboo about everything is trying to get those nerves reconnected. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
And if you do have a few minutes where maybe if people have questions, could you maybe speak with them outside of the room and maybe a few minutes if unless your schedule prohibits that? I'm talking a very short period of time. So, okay. Again, thank you very much. Okay. Credentials Committee. Oh, let's, before that, door prize.
We have Katrina Fudge.
Katrina Fudge. Somebody's going to draw the number?
Yeah.
Okay. Eugene Lozano.
Oh,
Debbie Berry. Okay, we'll do one more.
Gene Lozano.
Yeah. Oh, unfair.
Martin Jones.
Yay.
Okay. Is Pamela Palaki here? Our credentials report. And if you could work your way around the table. It's a long table.
She's at the table with the mic.
Oh, good. Okay. It's all yours, Pamela. Go ahead and do the credentials report.
I want to first thank Jean for taking that presidential license and switching the the agenda around because I needed to step out and it gave me a chance to do that and now I can concentrate. Thank you very much. We had most attendance was good today. We have a few issues here, but I'll go through it and let you know what they are. And after I call everybody, if I've missed anyone, any chapter, after we're finished, can you please let me know? And I'll make sure that we remedy that. First is the ACB Capital Chapter. The president is Paul Patchy, Jr. The delegate is Joni Patchy. The alternate is Eric Smiley. Members are 37. They have 7 votes. The nominating committee representative is Joan Tachi. Next is Active Blind Inland Valley Chapter. President Nellie Emerson. Delegate Nellie Emerson. Alternate delegate is Nancy Younger. Number of members are 13. They have 5 votes. And nominating rep Nancy Younger. And if you guys need to correct me while I'm reading your information, you can, please. Alameda County Chapter, President Miss Fudge, Katrina McCurdy. And Delegate Katrina McCurdy. Alternate is none. Number of members are 10. 5 votes, and the nominating rep, Katrina McCurdy. The next is Antelope Valley. They have not attended. Next is Association for Multicultural Concerns. The president is Lillian Scafie. Delegate is Foster Brown. Alternate is Don Brown, no relation. And number of members are 30. 5 votes, and the nominating rep is Don Brown. Next is Bayview Chapter. President Michael Kastner. Delegate Steve Fort. Alternate is none. We have 49 members. And number of votes, 10. Nominating committee rep is Steve Fort. Next is Braille Revival League of California. President Steve Fort. Delegate Marlene O'Neill. Alternate is Keith Johnson. Number of members are 45. 5 votes, and nominating committee rep Marlene O'Neill. Next is Butte County, and we have no representation. Next is California Council of the Blind Students, President Tuan Nguyen, Delegate Tuan Nguyen, Alternate Lena Dawes, number of members are 10, number of votes 5, nominating rep is Tuan Nguyen. Next is California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. President, my friend Bernice Kandarian. Delegate is Donna Sanchez. Alternate delegate is Dan Smith. Number of members are 83. They have 5 votes, and nominating rep is Bernice Kandarian. Okay, I'll try to talk louder. You don't want me to do that. California Library Users of California, President Judy Wilkinson, Delegate Judy Wilkinson, Alternate none, number of members are 24, 5 votes, nominating committee rep Judy Wilkinson. Can you hear me now? Okay, I hope my voice holds out. Coachella Valley Chapter, we have no representation. Next is the Compton Chapter, President Michael Richardson, Delegate Michael Richardson, Alternate Delegate Jeffrey Sims, number of members are 40, 8 votes, nominating committee rep Michael Richardson. Next is Hunter Costa Chapter, President Gabe Griffith, Delegate Gabe Griffith, Alternate Vita Zubeli, number of members are 14. They have 5 votes, and the nominating rep is Gabe Griffith. Next is East Los Angeles Chapter. President Luis Herrera. Delegate Luis Herrera. Alternate Delegate Charles Navarrete. Number of members are 30. They have 6 votes, and the nominating committee rep is Luis Herrera. Next is the Fresno chapter. President is Roger Hood. Delegate is Nancy Engren. Alternate delegate is Nathan Romo. Number of members are 22. They have 5 votes, and the nominating committee rep is Nancy Engren. Next is the Glendale Burbank chapter. The president is Artis Bazin. Delegate is Artis Bazin. Alternate delegate is Teddy Joy Rimhill. Number of members are 35. They have 7 votes, and the nominating committee rep is Artis Bazin. I don't catch my breath, you guys. next is the Golden Gate chapter, and I didn't see anyone present this morning, and I understand we have someone present now. That's Dr. Jones? Thank you. So that would be President Dr. Martin Jones, Delegate Dr. Martin Jones, Alternate Foster Brown. Number of members are 22. They have 5 votes, and the nominating committee rep is Foster Brown. Is that information all correct? Thank you. Okay, great. Yes.
I think Foster Brown was representing 2 different organizations, and is that? I don't believe that's permissible. Roger, could you make a ruling as unofficial parliamentarian?
It's permissible to be on the nominating committee for one and alternate or delegate for another, but it's not permissible to be a delegate for one and alternate for another.
Correct.
Because you might have to be voting for both on the same vote.
Yes. And that's... we have a situation like that?
Yeah, unless it's nominating committee.
No, I don't believe it's nominating.
Delegate
and alternate. So there has to be a change.
Well, it's on the alternate, I mean the nominating committee for the Golden Gate. Is that what you're talking about?
Multiculture?
AMC.
But it's nominating committee for is he alternate or is he nominating committee?
Alternate for both.
He can be nominating committee for one, but he can't.
No, we're not
be
talking about nominating committee at all. That's not an issue.
Okay.
So one of the groups are going to have to choose a different alternate. So why don't we?
Well, I need to know.
No alternate.
Okay.
So for Golden Gate, you want me to indicate alternate none?
Correct.
I'll do that. Correct. Thank you. And I asked about that this morning, by the way. I was awake, and I didn't get a response. So I'll change it right now.
Thank you too.
Bless your heart. Thank you. Okay. Thanks. Okay. Mommy, you're not. Okay, we'll try to get back on track here. And thank you for catching me, you guys. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, President Brandy Medkiff, Delegate Paul Leon, and alternate is Dane Gear. Number of members are 22. They have 5 votes, and the nominating committee rep is John Ross. Greater Long Beach Chapter, President Michael Kastner, I'm sorry. Delegate is Robert Wendt. Alternate is none. Number of members are 23. They have 5 votes, and the nominating committee rep is Robert Wendt. Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake, Michael Kramer, you're right. Thank you for that correction. I have it that way. I just can't read. I can't, no. Greater Los Angeles Chapter, President is Pamela Metz. Delegate is Pamela Metz. Alternate is Lynn Coates. Number of members are 20. They have 5 votes, and the nominating committee rep is Pamela Hill Metz. That's how they have it on that portion. Guide dog users of California, President Mary Beth Randall. Delegate Mary Beth Randall. Alter Ken Metz. Number of members are 15. Nominating committee rep Mary Beth Randall. High Desert Chapter, we don't have representation. Humboldt Council of the Blind, President James Forbes, Delegate Juliana Harris, Alternate none. Number of members are 11. They have 5 votes, and nominating committee rep is Juliana Harris. Inland Empire Chapter. And I didn't see anyone this morning. Is there anyone here now from the Inland Empire Chapter? Hearing none, I will move on. Orientin Center of the Blind Alumni Association, President Judy Wilkinson. Delegate is Warren Cushman. Alternate is none. Number of members are 19. They have 5 votes, and nominating committee rep is Warren Cushman. Orange County Chapter, President Andrea Pitsenbarger. Delegate is Gail Crossan, excuse me. Alternate delegate is Debbie Kessler. Number of members are 23, and nominating committee rep is Debbie Kessler. Randolph Shepherds, Shepherd Vendors of California, President David Hanlon. Delegate is Paul Patchy Sr. Okay. Yes, there is. Alternate number of members, 13. Nominating committee is David Hanlon. Redwood Empire Council, President Kat Abbey. Delegate Gigi DeMarie. Alternate William Gillespie. Number of members are 28. They have 6 votes. And the nominating committee rep is William Gillespie. San Bernardino Chapter. And I didn't see anyone this morning. Is there anyone here now? San Bernardino Chapter. No? Okay. Okay, San Diego Braille Club, President George Drain, Delegate Charlene Arnelis, Alternate is Joseph Lopez. Number of members are 28. They have 6 votes, and the nominating committee rep is Charlene Arnelis. San Diego Chapter, and I didn't see anyone this morning. Okay, who's that? Okay, thank you. So president is Larry Freeman. Delegate is Douglas Martin. Alternate is Patty Davis. Number of members are 23. They have 5 votes. And nominating committee rep is Doug Martin. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. San Francisco Chapter. Yay. I'm not supposed to show that partiality there. President is Frank Welty. Delegate is Frank Welty. Alternate is Linda Perrell. Number of members are 33. They have 7 votes, and the nominating rep is Frank Welty. Thank you. I think I know this chapter. San Gabriel Valley Chapter. President is yours truly, Apology. Thank you. Thank you very much. Delegate is Bill Berry. Alternate is none. Number of members are 48. We have 10 votes, and the nominating committee rep is Bill Berry. Yes, he is. San Mateo County Chapter. Is there someone here from San Mateo? San Mateo County Chapter? Okay, I'm going to go ahead. Okay. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind. President Rob Turner, my predecessor. Delegate, let's see here. Can't read my own writing. Oh, I'm sorry. Delegate is Alice McGrath. Let's see. Who's the alternate, you guys? I see it. Okay. Thank you. And yes. I just can't read my writing here. I'm getting there. Members are 80. We won't. Number of votes are 16. And the nominating committee rep is Alice McGrath. Thank you. Let's see here. Solano County Council of the Blind. President Betty Christensen. Delegate Diane Phelps. Alternate is none. Number of members are 17. Nominating committee rep, Diane Phelps. Oh, I'm sorry. Five votes. I'm sorry. Number of members are 17. They have five votes. I'm sorry. Skip that. Yosemite Gateway is not here. Is there anyone I missed? Is there anyone? I beg your pardon?
Go on.
I will if you will. So what I'd like to do, hearing no one that I've missed, is I'm going to go through their quick list of those who are not seated. And that would be Antelope Valley, Butte County, Coachella Valley, High Desert, Inland Empire Chapter, San Bernardino Chapter, San Mateo Chapter, let's see, and Yosemite Gateway. So I believe that's eight. So I just wanted to keep you abreast of that. So that concludes my report. I want to, if I may, I'd like to thank, firstly, Donna for entrusting me with this responsibility, and I'll try to be worthy of it. And I'd really like to thank Roger Peterson and Bernice for their encouragement, and most especially my dear friend Ed Branch, who, without whom I could not perform this responsibility. Before I leave you, I just want to please encourage you that when you have any questions, comments, concerns, or changes, even if it's before the convention, please call me and let me know. I'm happy to discuss and work with you and be flexible. You know, it's a real balancing act to try to do the parliamentarian right thing and yet be compassionate to those who have needs. So please do that. And with that, I just wanted to leave you with a little joke here. There's a family who has a little five-year-old son, and it's a hot August day, and they decide to have company over for dinner. So these people come over for dinner, and they're ready to sit down to eat, and the mother says to the little boy, Johnny, the five-year-old, Johnny, please say grace for us. And Johnny says, Mom, I don't know what to say. And she said, well, just say what I usually say. And he says, Dear Lord, why do we have these people over for dinner on such a hot day? So with that, I want to thank you for your patience with me and indulging me, and I look forward to meeting the rest of you that I haven't, and I hope you guys have a wonderful convention. Thank you
okay.
so much.
I will entertain a motion to approve the Credentials Committee's report. Okay, the discussion, Kathy Skivers.
I just want to know who the other members of the committee
and
are.
And I apologize for that. My other committee member is Steve Fort, and I apologize, Steve. Believe me, it's not your lack of importance that caused that. It's my lack of sleep. So anyway, I'm really sorry, and Steve is a dedicated member of my committee. Thank you, Kathy, for bringing that up.
Any other discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay, the ayes have it. Thank you, Pamela. Okay, we're going to change the program again. The Jeff Kahn was supposed to give the legislative governor's... the legislative report on behalf of Governmental Affairs Committee. That, we're doing a switch. Jeff's going to do that tomorrow afternoon, but what we're going to do now, as I understand, is that we're going to have reading of some of the Constitution and bylaws changes that will be read and then voted on tomorrow. And then there will be some other Constitution and bylaws things tomorrow that will be read and voted on at the next convention. So I'm going to turn it over to Gabe right now, as the chair of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee.
All right. There I am. Thank you, Gene. And as Gene said, I have about seven, I think, constitutional amendments that we are doing a first reading on, because in order to vote on these at one convention, we have to do a first reading one day, and then a second with no discussion, and then a second reading the next day with discussion and voting. So here comes the first reading of several items. The first item that I'm going to be reading is Article 4, and it's with the Newell Perry Endowment Trust. The current language, Section 4.9, the trustees shall prepare an annual report to the membership at the council's annual fall convention. The actions that we're taking are to delete the first reference to annual, delete the word fall. So the proposed language is Section 4.9, the trustees shall prepare a report to the membership at the council's annual convention. The next item I have is Article Number 5, dealing with meetings. The current language, there shall be a regularly scheduled meeting of the California Council of the Blind annually, the time and place to be fixed in advance by the president or the convention. Actions, replace president or the convention with board of directors. So the proposed language is Section 5.1. There shall be a regularly scheduled meeting of the California Council of the Blind annually, the time and place to be fixed in advance by the board of directors. Let me get down to my next item. Okay, the next item I have is Article 11, Board of Directors duties. Current language, Section 11.11, on or before January 1 of each year, the treasurer shall notify all affiliated organizations, sustaining members, and members at large of the annual dues owed by them to the council. The treasurer shall prepare a list of paid-up members to be given to the president at least 45 days in advance of the regularly scheduled spring convention. Members may submit amendments to the list to the treasurer up to 30 days prior to the regularly scheduled fall convention. Action, delete the last two sentences. That is, the treasurer shall prepare a list of paid-up members to be given to the president at least 45 days in advance of the regularly scheduled spring convention. members may submit amendments to the list to the treasurer up to 30 days prior to the regularly scheduled fall convention and replace them with a single sentence that is, the treasurer shall prepare a list of paid members to be given to the president by February 15th. So the proposed language will be section 11.11. On or before January 1 of each year, the treasurer shall notify all affiliated organizations, sustaining members, and members at large of the annual dues owed by them to the council. The treasurer shall prepare a list of paid members to be given to the president by February 15th. The next item I have is Article 11, Board of Directors Duties. The current language is Section 11.12. The treasurer shall report the council's annual financial position to the council membership assembled at each fall convention. The treasurer shall also provide reports of the council's current financial affairs to the president or to the council within 30 days after receipt of a written request thereof by the president or the board of directors. Action, delete the word fall. Proposed language, section 11.12. The treasurer shall report the council's annual financial position to the council membership assembled at each convention. The treasurer shall also provide reports of the council's current financial affairs to the president or to the council within 30 days after receipt of a written request thereof by the president or the board of directors. And I believe this is the last item I have to read tonight. Current language is section 14.1. Dues shall be paid on a calendar year basis and shall, if unpaid, be deemed delinquent on or after March 1st of the year due. Actions, delete March 1st and replace with February 15th. Proposed language, section 14.1, dues shall be paid on a calendar year basis and shall, if unpaid, be deemed delinquent on or after February 15th of the year due. And that concludes the first reading of the amendments, and we will be back to do a second reading tomorrow. I now turn back over to Gene. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Gabe. And again, tomorrow afternoon, we will hear the Jeff Toms legislative report, and there will then be discussion on the Constitution and bylaws changes that Gabe just read, and then there'll be another reading of other bylaws, the first reading, for to be discussed and voted on at the fall conference convention. Okay, our next item is the ACB report, and I'd like to turn it over to President Mitch Pomerantz.
Thank you, Gene. And I can say with absolute certainty that that will be the last time that I will ever be introduced at this convention, other than perhaps tomorrow evening, as the ACB president. I never thought I would appreciate term limits quite so much. I say this every year, and this is, I think, the fourth or fifth, that I've given this report, that it's been a particularly busy year for the American Council of the Blind. When I got elected in 2007, I heard folks, and it's usually folks who are uninformed about us. You know, the NFB has a $10 million budget. Although the fact that they're starting to get involved in the vehicle donation program, which isn't doing very much anymore, tells me that they're hurting. Nobody in their right mind starts getting into a vehicle donation program now. But when I got elected in 2007, it got real old real fast, folks saying, well, we don't know what ACB does. If nothing else, I hope that in the past 6 years, we've gotten folks to stop saying nonsense like that. In the last year, or since July of 2012, we've been quite active both on the legislative, the regulatory, and the advocacy front. A number of folks from California, fortunately attended, given the fiscal situation here, the President's meeting and legislative seminar in Washington, D.C. in February, at which point we presented two pieces of proposed legislation. The first one really comes from the American Foundation for the Blind and is the Ann Sullivan Macy Act. There are issues both on the state level, in all states, as well as nationally, vis-a-vis special education, particularly as it relates to blind and visually impaired children. More and more of those children are multiply disabled. They're not just blind. They have other disabilities. And the record keeping, the statistics, the focus on their special needs is lacking. And it's about as wonky a bill as you can imagine, which is why I'm not going into detail. But essentially, it requires considerably more focus on blind and visually impaired youngsters, particularly those with additional disabilities. The second piece of legislation we've talked about for a couple of years. As we know, or should know by now, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which for some peculiar reason is referred to as CMS, I'm not sure which of the M's went away, but one of them had. Because of their fear a few years ago that they might have to pay for 50 million pairs of eyeglasses, had what was called a lens exclusion introduced into the regulations, which means that you cannot get CMS to pay for any device that includes a lens, be it a pair of eyeglasses or a video magnifier or a CCTV. Given these times, and I love the terminology. I think it's Paul Krugman calls them the deficit scolds, the folks who are trumpeting doom and gloom if we don't balance the budget. We recognize that getting any legislation passed that might require more money spent on Medicare, we are proposing a pilot study to determine, in fact, what the real cost would be if the lens exclusion were removed. What we do know is that blind and visually impaired seniors every year, by greater and greater numbers, are having to give up their independent lives and go into nursing homes or assisted facilities because they can't read their mail, they can't read a recipe, they can't do those things which they have done up until the beginnings of their vision loss. And we mean to change that. We mean to get that lens exclusion removed. And we also understand that this will be a long process. But we are patient, and we believe ultimately we will succeed. You'll recall that a couple of things happened. The first one in 2011, when the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act was enacted by Congress, which required the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to come out with proposed standards for minimum sounds to be made by hybrid and electric vehicles. While that was supposed to happen within 18 months of the time the bill was passed, it didn't quite work out that way. And the NPRM, or Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, actually came out, I believe, in late December or early January. It's not a bad document. It's a long document and very technical. And Doug Martin, if I had known that you were still floating around down in San Diego, I would have called on you because it's a document only an acoustical engineer could love. And I know you did that in a past life. In fact, if you want some real nostalgia, you should go on the website and read that puppy. I don't believe it's on ours. I think it's on NHTSA's website. I'll track it down for you. It's wonderful reading if you have a master's degree in acoustical engineering, which I don't. However, ACB has responded. We agree with about 90% of the document. We have some quibbles. And we are looking forward to the final standards to come out at some point. We're not exactly certain when that's going to happen. Our comments were due back to NHTSA on March 15th. So perhaps by this summer, we'll actually have those minimum sound standards for those vehicles that, particularly in a state like California, where everybody but me is into green, we might actually be relatively safe crossing the streets at some point. Those of you this morning who attended the CAT committee heard my presentation on accessible prescription drug labeling. That piece of legislation, which was part of the Food and Drug Administration Safety and Innovation Act, was passed by Congress and actually signed by the President on July 9th. And that established a working group which has been working. We have now had four meetings, face-to-face in January, and three teleconference meetings, including one this past Tuesday. That working group, which includes representatives from the major blindness organizations and agencies, as well as reps from the disability community, the overall community, the senior citizens community, and Big Pharma, CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, you name it, there. as well as the industry lobbyists representing the major chains and the independents. We have all spoken with one voice, the blind community. We are telling them that the best practices that the legislation says we need to develop need to be fully inclusive. And I want to stress that. I stressed it this morning. There are folks who somehow believe that we are stressing one type of accommodation or one type of best practice methodology over another. We are not. We believe that we need a number of different audio formats, from script talk to talking RX bottles to cell phone apps. We are talking about large print predicated on the standards developed by CCLVI. And we are obviously talking about Braille. And for those who somehow believe that we are playing favorites, all I can say is you couldn't be any wronger if you tried. We've got another meeting scheduled for April 23rd, I believe. We have had that information out on ACBL and the leadership website. I believe Donna has posted it on CCBL. We'll see. We'll try to get it on the connection as well. The meetings are open in terms of your ability to listen in on the festivities, and there is an opportunity for public comment during the last half hour of the meeting. The meetings take place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific time. We have been involved in attempting to cobble together a treaty to allow the freer exchange of materials across international borders through the work of the World Intellectual Property Organization. Our executive director, Melanie Brunson, has been a part of that effort. She has been to Switzerland enough times that she can now give tours. We hope that, and there is a good chance, that a final treaty document can be worked out. They've got a meeting again, this time in Marrakesh, Morocco, in June. And the expectation is that a treaty could be finalized or could actually be voted on this fall in Geneva. And again, this has to do with copyrighted materials. And lest we think that this only really benefits other nations, the reality is that particularly with the increase in the Hispanic population in this country, ONCE, the Spanish National Organization of the Blind, does a tremendous job in putting out, publishing lots and lots of material in Braille, in Espanol. So there is clearly a benefit for those folks who read Spanish and speak Spanish in this country. So we are actively involved in the WIPO discussions. Our website continues to undergo significant improvements. You may know by now, should know, that the ACB web administrator is a Californian, Annette Carter. Annette also, by the way, was the CCLVI rep to the prescription drug labeling work group. But we have made significant changes to our website in the year plus. We reconstituted the web task force under the able chairmanship of Nolan Crabb, who is a former editor of the Braille Forum and is now the president of our Ohio affiliate, the affiliate that will be hosting this summer's national conference convention. I'll be talking about that momentarily. But the website now is easier to navigate. We are focusing on what ACB's accomplishments have been throughout our now almost 52 years of history. One of the things that came out of the strategic plan that we did in 2011 and 2012 was a recognition that we've got to stop living in the past. And we have taken some significant steps to talk about what ACB has done, from our involvement in getting Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act put into play, to our work on the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act, the Communications and Video Accessibility Act, and all of the other activities with which this organization has been involved and which we all know about, but we need to tell others about. So our website continues to expand and to be an entity that really talks about what the American Council of the Blind is all about. Along the same lines, ACB Radio continues to grow and to develop. We have now a sixth stream. This one in an effort to reach out not just to blind and visually impaired persons around the world, but to the sighted members of the community who need to hear what we have to say. We're incorporating a lot of international programming from Voice of America, from others, and isn't specifically relevant to blindness, but is geared toward attracting folks who otherwise might not even show an interest in what we're doing to at least take a listen, and we sneak a plug or two in and hopefully hook them to hearing about the efforts and the work of the American Council of the Blind. I want to talk for a moment about our conference and convention. We have moved things forward a day because of the hotel, the Hyatt Regency in Columbus, Ohio. So it will begin on Friday, July 5th with our pre-convention board meeting. There will likely be a tour on the 4th, and we will have our first plenary session this year on Saturday evening, and we will have our final business session Thursday, the following Thursday, and the banquet Thursday night, and on Friday, our post-convention board meeting. We have a couple of very special guests who will be attending. We always have an international guest of honor. And thanks to Donna and my visit, along with a number of other ACB members last year, to Madrid, Spain, we have invited, and he has accepted, the president of the Spanish National Organization of the Blind, ONCE, Organización Nacional Ciegos de España, Miguel Cabrera. Miguel is a fantastic, fantastic gentleman. ONCE this year, and the reason we tendered the invitation, it's ONSE's 75th anniversary. If you are blind or have a blind child and you want services of any kind in Spain, you belong to ONSE. I do not exaggerate. ONSE claims that 98% of all blind people in Spain are members of ONSE. And unlike another blindness organization we all know, they aren't exaggerating. So Miguel will be at the convention, as will the second vice president of the World Blind Union, Enrique Perez. Donna and I have come to know and I think claim Enrique as a friend. We hung out, spent some time with him at the WBU meeting in Bangkok this past November, and he will be attending and talking about the World Blind Union. But on the domestic front, you may know that a new RSA commissioner has been designated by the president. She has not yet been confirmed, and we hope that she will be confirmed by July, because that's the only way she can come. The new RSA commissioner is a woman from Massachusetts by the name of Janet Labreck. So she will be in attendance. Additionally, of course, we will have numerous other speakers. We will have a myriad of workshops, programs put on by our various ACB committees and special interest affiliates. And it's basically a three-ring circus for blind and visually impaired persons. You all come. I want to talk, and I want to wrap it up for a couple of minutes talking about something that came up at the president's meeting this evening, and that's the notion of change. In 2011, ACB, the board of directors, decided to foot the bill for a strategic plan. In most not-for-profit organizations, a strategic plan is done every 5 years to determine what changes need to be made to an organization, to look at its strengths, to look at its weaknesses, to plot a course for the next 5 years. We undertook in late 2011 and through into 2012 the process of self-examination. It was painful, but it was absolutely necessary. And out of that strategic plan has come already a number of positive changes in the operation of the American Council of the Blind, including the work on our website, including the new data management system that we have purchased that is going to streamline the way ACB collects membership data. Concomitant with that is a new donor tracking process or system that will allow us to do a far better job fundraising for the organization. And even before the strategic plan, of course, I had a mission. I really had two missions as president. One was to establish an advisory board to bring in folks who had access to money, because most of us don't, who were interested in the American Council of the Blind and could aid us in the process of getting us hooked up with that you know, those one percenter types. And the other thing that I wanted to see happen was to institute something that a democratic organization like ACB didn't have, a secret ballot, something that CCB has had for as long, I suspect, as there's been a CCB, which, believe it or not, goes back to before I became a member of CCB. We accomplished that, although a lot of folks in ACB weren't especially happy about it. Your board of directors decided, after we had kind of broken in Don Wells, who is the fellow who did our strategic plan for ACB, the CCB board decided to have Mr. Wells come and do a strategic plan for CCB, and I guess that will be happening in the next couple, 3 months. It will involve some changes to this organization. And what I said at the president's meeting is this. In biology, an organization either grows and changes or it dies. We have some wonderful members in the California Council of the Blind, but all too many of them, and to some extent I have fallen into that category because I'm now of an age where I'd prefer not to make too many changes myself. But the reality, folks, is we have to change. I go to a number and have been to a number of state conventions over the last 6 years. And the organizations, the affiliates that are embracing changes to how they do business, how they fundraise, how they recruit members, how they function, are the affiliates that are surviving. The organizations that are sticking their head in the sand and saying, this is how we did it in 1955, this is how we're always going to do it, they're going to die. We don't want the California Council of the Blind to die. What we have to be cautious of is to make sure that the changes we undertake are changes for the better. We don't want to change just to change. But as sure as I'm sitting here, change has to happen. I'm in the process of reading a book by Robert Putnam called Bowling Alone. Came out in 2000. And it charts the decline over the last 50 years of civic engagement in every aspect of national life, including voting, including membership in organizations such as ours, in all aspects of civic life. We need to adapt. We need to find ways of bringing blind and visually impaired persons back into this organization. Since we no longer have schools for the blind across the country, even though we have a school for the blind here in California, even though blind and visually impaired youth may not even meet each other, may think they're the only one, and thereby not understand the importance of jointly working together to deal with the common concerns we all share as blind folks, we have to find ways to change and to change the opinions and the attitudes of those blind young people. I had a brief conversation after the president's dinner with Steve Fort, and I said, Steve, you know, I'm making some changes in my life. I have run for my last political office in ACB and CCB. I'm not quite sure where the next 10 or 15 years of my life's journey will take me, but political involvement in this organization, in one of them. I will certainly be involved on sidelines in the background. I will be immediate past president of ACB, but I do not intend to be involved as an out front leader again. But there are plenty of capable people in ACB, and I believe plenty of capable people in CCB to take over. So don't be fearful of change. Embrace it, accept it, make sure it's positive change. Thank you and good night.
Thank you, Mitch. Let's do a door prize. Donna Sanchez.
Hey, Ed. Ed.
A tin of either cookies or candy. They wanted to know what she won. You want to do one more?
Yeah, and then Ed, if you tell Joni I'd like to talk to her before she disappears.
Who?
Joni Patchy. Before she... Yeah, before it's not easy for me to get around. Okay, we're going to do one more.
What did Joni win?
Well,
Donna won.
No, Donna Sanchez
won.
Deborah Thompson.
Yay.
Is Deborah here? I guess she's not here. Let's pull again.
She didn't want to eat my fudge.
Betty Henderson.
Betty Henderson.
Kathleen Burnham.
Eric Skivers. And just, Joni, before you leave, I need to talk with you, please. Okay. Our next speaker and last for the evening is President Donna Pomerantz giving the CCB update, report. Let's give her a hand.
You got a mic?
Good evening, everyone. Good morning. It is morning somewhere, yes. In Bangkok, Mitch says. First, I would like to start this report off by thanking each and every one of you who have been extremely active since our last convention to now. The things that CCB does would not be able to happen without each and every one of you who is involved, because the one thing that I always say is that we are the CCB. Yes, we are. It's not just the president, it's not just the officers, it's not just the board, it's each and every one of us. And so on that note, I'd like to share with you a few items that have happened since our last conference and convention. First of all, I would like to let you know that the CCB was a part of assisting in giving input and the development, helping in some of the upgrades and updates to the ACB's new membership database. We provided some assistance, did some evaluating for low vision. The national office was very appreciative of the input that came from CCB. The reason that CCB was asked to participate is because we're a pretty large group. We're a ginormous family. And there were a number of things that our national organization needed to hear about from us. I think that I'm very appreciative of the input as well that I asked Ed to give, because Ed is key to gathering the information that each and every chapter and affiliate gives to the office every year. So the input that came from Ed was critical as far as the usability in dealing with large numbers. Another thing that we were involved in, and Mitch touched on it, CCB had a delegation of approximately 7 people at the ACB legislative seminar. That happened as a result of the generosity of the grassroots, because the CCB cannot afford to send delegations of 10 and 15 like it used to in the past. But the California Council of the Blind believes that it is very important for a delegation to be a part of going to Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. And that was shown by action from the grassroots. That was shown by the chapters who sponsored and stipend delegates to attend from their chapters. Also, the generosity of individuals who paid out of their own personal finances so that they could attend representing the California Council of the Blind. Several people said, "I know you're struggling. You have 7 people here. How did you do that?" How did we do it? We did it because the membership wanted it to be done. And it was evident by the financial support given to the delegates through the chapters and the generosity of individuals as well. That delegation was led by our own Chair of Governmental Affairs, Jeff Tom. Jeff helped organize as he was balancing everything else he needed to do for ACB, because he does have responsibilities there as a member of their board. But Jeff led that delegation. And that delegation, Jeff led us. I was present. Roy and Hazel Harmon were there. Vincent Calderon, one of your board members. Christina Wood, a board member of the Silicon Valley chapter, and Artis Bazin. That was our delegation that went to Washington, D.C. another thing that took place since the fall conference and convention is the board supported having another mutt strut. However, we are in a constant state of learning. And I have no problem in saying that there are bumps in the road. And there are always times when I would say, gee, I could have done this way, or maybe if we did this another way, it would be better. So each and every year that we've had Mutt Strut, we learn new things. And I take those things to heart. So one of the things that we did was we developed a packet or a roadmap that we sent out to different regions who expressed interest in wanting to have Mutt Strut in their region. Some of the questions that were in these roadmap packets, as I call them, were questions with helping people realize the research that they needed to do when they submitted their proposals. Committee structures, chairs of those committees, specifics on what's needed in a venue, different things like that were in that proposal. And each region needed to fill out those proposals. Oh, and of course, before I forget, Mr. Treasurer, we did have budgets in those proposals as well. And our treasurer helped develop that part of it as far as what the specifics needed to be that comprised the budget. So our regions filled out proposals, and in early January, three regions were chosen of Mutt Strut. It was definitely a lot of work for folks to prepare those proposals. However, I see that as a labor of love for the organization. It took a lot of time. Some people probably wanted to kill me. Mitch did. You weren't even involved. Yes, the one-sided conversations. I thought you were going to leave. You're done. it was a good amount of work up front, but one of the things that we learned from past years was that we needed to hit the ground running when we decided to start Mutt Strut in different regions. And so our officers were very supportive, and we went forward to the board, approved us giving proposals to regions who were interested. And I think we're going to learn even more from this year as well. We also hired a statewide coordinator on contract to help oversee the Mutt Strut. Reviewed resume. Our officers were very pleased. We hired a woman by the name of Gita Jackson. Folks got to hear her voice last night at our board meeting. She has a great energy. She doesn't take no for an answer. And she is learning a great deal from us. And I think we're all a great team. Now, another item was that I was directed to put together a task force to begin working on the annual conference and convention transition. So I asked a number of people if they would be interested in serving. I thought about it for a while. I didn't appoint that task force right away. I waited a few months because I wanted to think of, believe it or not, the diversity of the core group that would be put together to undertake this task. And I wanted to make sure to put people on there who would not always agree. I needed to do that because that's the only way that we could get a good picture of everything that was to come before us. So I thought about it for a few months before we actually came together. And myself and Roger Peterson served on both groups that I put together that comprised the task force. The first group was going to be dealing with constitution and bylaws logistics. And there was a lot of work done in that group. I asked Gabe Griffith to serve, who is our current chair of constitution and bylaws. I asked Jerry Kunstler, who is the previous chair of constitution and bylaws, to serve. The most disagreeable one of all, I asked Mitch Pomerantz to serve. I made all three offers I couldn't refuse, as they say. The discussions that happened, we had several calls. There was lots of work done via email. Took place over several months. The work of Jerry Kunstler, who kind of ran with it and put everything out to us. And some of those debates, I was looking at some of those emails and rethinking some of those conversations. We had some very lively discussions. And I am very pleased to have heard several times this weekend that people understand the amount of work that was done by this group to lay a foundation for discussion as to how we move forward in the future. The next group was, of course, the group that would deal with the logistics of our conference and convention. There were lots of lively discussions there too. Several calls, several emails. Jean Lozano, our conference and convention chair, was chairing that group and is chairing that group. I also asked Peter Pardini, our treasurer, to serve on that committee as well, on that task force. Because Peter not only is our money man, but Peter is also in the exhibit hall. He is all over the place. He's worked with me in dealing with the hotels and contracts and all of that. So I felt it was important to have that perspective in there as well. And of course, I asked Jeff Tom, as our immediate past president, to serve on that group, on that task force group, dealing with the conference and convention, because he's presided over a number of these, you know? And everybody brought different perspectives to this group. We convened to start off. We had a conference call together, all of us, and talked about a plan of action and steps and milestones, time periods. And then the groups broke up. And as I said, I had Roger and myself serve on both. And then at the end, we all came together and came up with what's coming before all of you this weekend and what came before the board last night as well. So that is another activity that's been pretty consuming. It's a big task. It's a task that requires a lot of thought and a lot of consideration. I'm not going to talk about the legislative activities that we've done because Jeff Tom will be doing that when he gives his report tomorrow. But what I do want to say is our resources may not be a lot financially. Currently, as you know, we have Ed Branch in the office. And Jeff Tom, of course, has agreed once again, and I don't take that for granted, to serve on a volunteer basis again as our governmental affairs chair. CCB has a presence in the Capitol, and that is definitely through the leadership of Jeff. And we had a delegation that went to the Capitol the starting day of our convention. I was told that that group was, let's see, what's this, how do they say it? Small but mighty? I think that I was told that 90 representatives' offices were visited on Thursday. And I'm not remembering the exact number of folks that attended, but it was a pretty powerful size group. It was, what was the... 12 people visited 90 offices. I think that deserves a huge applause. We have definitely continued to be a part of structured negotiations. The most recent press release that I put out was the Walmart press release, the pilot project. What I would encourage people to do is, because right now in California, we have one Walmart that is participating in the pilot project for Script Talk. People being able to get their prescriptions using Script Talk. What I would encourage you to do is if your Walmart is not one that has that program, and the Walmart here in California that has it is in Mountain View. We have a good-sized chapter out there in Mountain View, I think. Silicon Valley. Hopefully, your chapter members will go to that Walmart, request the Script Talk. We definitely need to show that this is something that people want. If your Walmart is not participating, let your Walmart know that you want accessible medications at your Walmart. Call them. When you do that, let us know as well. or let Lainey and Linda know. We'd like to know if you make those calls and what Walmart it is, so that it can help us keep track of where the need is. We are continuing to work with CVS. We are continuing to work with Raley's. They're in the process of their testing their device after feedback that we gave. So those cases are still taking place. We are still working with Kaiser. There has been a change in council, but we will be back on track again within the next month or so. So we are still working hard on the structured negotiations and with all our cases. We're also working on voting access issues. We have representation on the Secretary of State's Voting Accessibility Advisory Committee. Myself and Jeff have been part of a statewide coalition dealing with issues with the Secretary of State. I also know that chapters have been dealing with voting issues on the local level in their area as well. So voting issues are very, very important to us. There's a lot more I can say, but I will not. I just want to let you know that CCB has been very, very busy. And I have to say, one of the things that really kind of hits at my heart from time to time are the people that say, when we put out announcements and notices and different things like that, you know, people that say, well, what does this do for us anyway? Or, you know, that's really nothing, or anything negative that they can say. Sadly, those folks are on the sidelines. They're not part of the group that is doing the heavy lifting. And that's why they're able to say things like that. But guess what? We are a democratic organization. People are able to express themselves as they see fit, even though at times it can be hurtful. But that's the organization that we are. We don't make people leave because they have negative things to say. They have rights to say what they want to say as well. And again, that's the kind of organization that we are. In closing, we are in a period of change. We're moving forward in uncertain waters. What I would want to make are five quick points related to change. And these are very difficult. I have listened to them because sometimes when things are hard, I need to remember these too. Embrace changes as opportunities for growth. When one door closes, another door opens. And we need to be sure to be on the lookout for that new door. Another point, don't be afraid of new situations or people. We don't know what's going to be coming our way, and that's okay. As long as we remember what our purpose is, and we stick together and move forward as a force into that new road that we're going to be traveling. Because fear won't allow us to see where we need to move to in the future. Apply wisdom from past experiences. I'm not a person that believes in completely saying the past is the past. We learn from our past. We've learned valuable lessons from our past. And what we need to do is we need to use the wisdom from those things that we have learned from our past and apply them to where we are moving to in the future. This one's a hard one. Think positive thoughts. Think positive thoughts. Doing that will help us cope better with change. And that is a difficult thing to do because we as human beings, when we're faced with change, the first instinct, I know I have it, the first instinct is to become defensive and stand my ground because change is scary. So try to help each other think positive thoughts and see it as an opportunity for things new, an opportunity to bring forward those things that we embrace and we treasure. Periods of uncertainty can be more difficult for folks who are pessimists because it's easy for us to hold on to the negative. As human beings, as Mitch said earlier, we don't like change. I don't like change. It's easy to travel through those roads that we know. Sometimes I don't even have to use my cane because I know the road. Right? In the house, you know, you travel around your house, you know where every turn is, you know where, you know, that's what I call the certain most secure place to be. So if I leave you with this, what I would wish to say is, and I know I can hear Mitch saying, be careful what you wish for. Be bold. Express yourselves. Tell us what you're thinking. Don't be shy. But with that expression of boldness also comes a responsibility. And that responsibility, CCB family, is that in your boldness, you must also step forward and help work the ground that we are going to walk together in the future. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you very much, Donna. I'd like to ask if Jeff Thomas in the audience. Jeff, can you make, and you're the chair as Resolutions Committee, would you like to make an announcement as a location and any last-minute resolution submittals, things that guidelines?
Yes, the resolutions is in Eureka, which is across, which is right near 220. It's like across from 220. On, you know, so it's on the second floor, easy to find. If you want to get any resolutions into us, please turn them in right after this session. We will help you finish them up or whatever, and we'll work on them. We're going to meet as a subcommittee for a while until some of our nominating committee colleagues come back. But you, as long as you get them in within the next, say, half hour to 45 minutes, we're not going to, you know, there'll be no problem. And of course, if you're in nominating first and run right over to us, that's fine as well.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes, Kathy Skivers.
Can you hear? Oh. Jane, I would like to ask you and Donna to allow me to make a comment or so. I know that we have a lot to do and it's late, but we've been talking a lot about change. And I've heard that there are people who've been around a long time that don't like change because they probably are sold by now. They don't know what that is. But let me tell you, I've been with you all since about 1949. And I don't know a lot of you, and that's a good thing. And my sons and I think so because that means we're growing. There are a lot of people here. But there are a lot of people here who mustn't be afraid of change. And change is not new to this council. We've had some changes in my time that would curl your hair, including the financial problems that we're having and lots of others, the nasty people that we don't have anymore. They went somewhere else, so we helped them go. I just want to say to you that one of the grandest things I heard was from Mitch, who said, make sure your change is right. And don't be afraid. We've never been afraid of anything. People are supposed to be afraid of us. We can't change that. But do make sure that your changes are something that you understand that you're doing. And it's my fault that you haven't your history yet, but you're about to get it. And one of the things I'm going to do pretty soon is do an article, if Judy will let me, about the change in the past. You have to know it can be done. But what it does take, it doesn't do any good to come here every once in a while and say, yes, we've got to do this, we have to do that. It has to be that you all know what we need, know what we want, know what we've done to get it, and we know how to do it. And then each one has to have the commitment and the strength and the really commitment is what it is, and the understanding and the willingness. You, nobody realizes, if you're new, that most of the things blind people take for granted in this state, they would never have seen without the organized blind in the council. And I am so proud of the people here. A lot of them were kids when I came in. But I want to say this, and Donna mentioned this at the President's dinner. She said that when she came in, I told her that people would say things and hurtful things and be nasty and mean. But I told her never to worry about that. She left this part out. That's something I want to leave to all of you. Don't ever worry what somebody says nasty about you, that they're not kind or whatever. Because you know what? When they're ratting on you, they're giving somebody else a rest. That brought me through my tour twos of presidents. I was president back in the days when we had World War. What was that one? That was between the first and the second one? Shoot, these people are out of sync. We had the Third World War way back then. But anyway, I want to congratulate Donna and the committee for what you've done with the conventions. And one of the things I did for the council that I think was one of the best things that happened to the council, I hired Ed Branch. So, no, we're not afraid of change, and we'll give you some little history on changes so you know what happens, so you know how to do it again. And thank you for me allowing this time.
Thank you, Kathy. And again, I'm glad you're here. Any last-minute announcement? Yeah, Peter? Yeah, nominating too.
Yeah, basically I'd like to remind people that hospitality is in room 1225. That's on the 12th floor. And half the proceeds of the hospitality suite will come back to CCB. So I'd like to encourage everyone to make an appearance and patronize the hospitality suite. And also, Envision American is one of our Envision America. The manufacturers of Script Talk is exhibiting in the exhibit hall. They'll be there tomorrow morning. So please stop by if you want to learn more about Script Talk. And also, please check out our other exhibitors. They'd love to hear you. Love to see you. And sweepstakes tickets are still available, and meal tickets are available. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. The nominating Pamela. Pamela. You're the chair of the nominating committee. You want to announce it's the details? I believe it follows after we adjourn here.
It does.
And
it's here.
And it's
in here, and we're going to begin Approximately 15 to 20 minutes from now, from this adjournment, we need to wait for Luis Herrera because he is breaking down the equipment because he is streaming, and so we arranged that ahead of time. So as soon as he's able, we will begin. So if you need to leave, please come right back. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and Donna suggested we, to close up, do a door prize.
A cash door prize.
Okay.
You can't pull your own. You've already been drawn. He's already been drawn. Stan Loveless. She's your
okay. Okay. Okay.
Who gets the candy?
John Ross.
John Ross.
Yay!
Candy bar and $25 check. Okay. So we are adjourned. And those of you who are on the nominating committee, be here in 15, 20 minutes, and the rest of us need to clear out. And I need to speak with Joni. Thank you.